Boker Tov world. So we have been, today's daf, Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Ayin Aleph. And we've been discussing how it is that we would be able to communicate in this, the case of someone who has been unable to speak, what type of remizos would be reliable to indicate that he means that we should write a get to his wife. Now, of course, we're talking about over here that he's someone who is of sound mind and he just lost his ability to speak. He had a stroke or whatever. And it's telling us how we can communicate with him. But now we discover that there seems to be a new alternative which would allow us to communicate even with a person who is technically a cheresh, and because of the fact that he's able to communicate in writing, we wouldn't give him a din of a cheresh. And this is a very fascinating thing. Of course, we've been thinking about this all along. I mean, why are we dealing with remizos? Tomer of Kano Merav. What if a cheresh, a real cheresh, not the case of the Mishnah, which is the case of an ilim, where he doesn't have the ability to speak, but over here he is a deaf mute, and he's able to write. Sheyachol ledaber mitoch haktav. He communicates perfectly, rationally, b'chtiva. So then that's considered to be a normal person, says Rav. Kotvim notnim get liishto. So Rabbi Yosef thought that this is the case in the same as in the Mishnah. Is a cheresh, meaning that he cannot talk, but he certainly is able to have das. So he said, what's the chiddush? That says in our Mishnah, if a person lost his voice, it is nishtatek, and we ask him, nichtov get lishtecha, and he nods his head, and we do this whole thing, we check him, with say, again, three times, you know, alternate it so it's not a pattern. And he's able to say, alav, lav, alayinein, arelo, yichtov luvietnusos. I mean, obviously, if he can actually clearly communicate in writing, I mean, that's better, isn't it, than just shaking your head in our hope that we've caught him properly? Normally, Rabbi Zera, what are you talking about? The Mishnah? The case of the Mishnah has nothing to do with Rav. Rav was referring to a real cheresh, to a person who has neither ability to speak or to hear. So he's a deaf mute. That's the whole problem of whether he's considered to be of sound mind. So what Rav is telling you is a tremendous chiddush. That somebody that you would think has no din of das, because he doesn't have the ability not to hear and not to speak, but that nonetheless, if he's able to communicate in writing, so then he's not considered to be a cheresh. What does that have to do with the Mishnah? Because in the Mishnah, is someone who just doesn't have a voice. So, Elaim comment? Well, you're asking me from the case in the Mishnah where the man lost his voice? Of course, and Elaim is different. Shiny Elaim, he's considered to have das. I'll prove it to you. It says Beferish in the Braita. Somebody who loses his voice is considered to be a 100% ben das. Tatanya. Midaber ve'ino shomea zo cheresh. Somebody can speak. He can't hear. That's the technical meaning of the word cheresh in the Torah. It's not the meaning of cheresh the way that the Gemara uses it. Shumea ve'inu medaber, somebody who can hear but cannot speak, that's called an ilaim. Both of them have a din of kipikin l'chol divreihem. So they are 100% mentally shulling. So they are competent to do anything. And therefore, what we're talking about over here is nothing like the Mishnah. By the way, of course, we've always had this discussion many, many times with this brisa. How do we know that a medaber ben a shomea, that's what's called the cheresh, and the shomea ben a medaber, that's what's called the ilaim? It's a pasuk. Dichtiv says beferish to ilaim, v'ani kecheresh lo eshma, uchilim lo yiftach pi. So you see, the David HaMelech says, when I heard people talking like that about me, I was pretended to be deaf, and I would pretend to be somebody who cannot open his mouth. But each one is different. The cheresh doesn't hear. The ilaim doesn't open his mouth because he can't speak. Or, you know what? The way that the word ilaim obviously is meaning the idea of not being able to speak, and it's not good with hearing. It's like people say that that word ilaim, that's ishtakel milule. This is a guy whose speech has been removed. Okay, anyway, so now I'll tell you, says Rabbi Zevin, I don't think there's any connection at all between the Rav Kahana Merav deal, which is talking about a real cheresh, in the case of the Mishnah, which is talking about an Elaine. You want to ask Akasha on Rav, don't ask why is it necessary. Ask how is it right? That's something else. I have a problem with Rav because of the following Ikashuli Akashuli. Look at this. The Tanya, here's the Braita. And it says that obviously being able to communicate in writing is not good enough. What's my Raya? Because if you hold that someone who communicates in writing is considered to be a ben da'at, so then what would be the din if somebody makes a shvua? Remember, there's a din of shvuata idut. If somebody says to a person, mashbiachani, that you know, I know you know edus about me. I want you to come into court and say the edus. And I'm making a shvua, you know edus. And the guy is mekabel that shvua, and he actually did know edus. And he denies knowing Edus. So then we have the entire din of Shavuos Edus and the Chiyuv of a Korban and so on. But the Braita says this entire halacha does not apply in the case where the person that you told the Shavuah to is not able to speak. Because if he's not able to speak, he wouldn't be able to testify anyway. And the klal on Shavuos Edus is that if you cannot testify, then you are not chayev if you deny testimony, because it wouldn't have made any difference anyway. Fine. So according to you, this doesn't make sense. He could testify. He just has to write down the testimony in a deposition, right? D'tanya, im lo yagid prat li ilayim sheinu yochol agid. Someone who cannot speak is not going to be chayev on Shavuos Edus because he couldn't testify anyway. But if what Rav was saying, am I? You could always give a deposition. What are you talking about now? Now you're asking a ridiculous question. Well, obviously, testimony is not the same as other things. That's a din in Edus, not a din in Cheresh at all. The din of Edus is al pi shnai edim, right? So al pi means mi pi hem, velo mi pi ktavam. That's gzeirat hakatuv. It has nothing to do with das. It has to do with the nature of testimony. So shayni edut rachman amar mi pi hem. And from there we medayek, velo mi pi ktavam. So therefore, even Rav agrees, of course, he may have das. It doesn't mean he can give over his testimony in writing. Fine. Now, of course, this raises, it's not for us to worry about right now, but this raises the overall issue about, so how in the world do we rely on these shtarot? Are not shtarot nothing but written testimony? Okay, so there's four totally different approaches to this. According to Rambam, Enoch Inami shtarot are a din that the Rabbanan created for us to be able to utilize in cases of the Nemomenes in order to allow the marketplace to proceed. Rashi says over here that the issue of Shtarot is because it was done in the same day, and therefore if it's done in the same day, that is the derech of doing, which doesn't explain very much. There's a number of other approaches in Rishonim. Again, so the question is a valid question. We don't need to get into it here, but obviously this is what Abai is clarifying to Rabbi Zera. Anyway, Meisve, is it true what Abai just said? Because the Braita seemed to be saying that actually we would be able to rely even benogea to edus on somebody who can write. It says, Kishem Shabot Kimoto Legitin, Kachbot Kinoto. So the same way we can figure out if a person is mentally competent, benogea get. Okay, so that includes, you don't even have to be able to write, you just have to be able to nod your head correctly or shake your head correctly. Now dig this. Masaot, matanot, eduyot, and yerushot. What do you mean, eduyot? So in other words, the guy can actually testify. It says, beferish over here, katari mil eduyot, and Abaya is claiming that there's no such thing as giving edut any way other than orally. Omer of Yosef, Aminyami, Omer of Sheshis. You know what this is referring to? This is referring to an aid that comes to say that a woman's husband died. So remember that we have very special halachas when it comes to Edus Isha, correct? And over there, we'll accept even Psuli Edus, we'll accept even Eid Echad, even the woman herself, and so on. So over there, with the Rabbanu, they were able to accept even the testimony that the guy gives Bechtav, or that he gives even Beremiza. But that this has nothing to do with what Abaye was talking about. Abaye was talking about the question of actual testimony in court. But wait, it does say over here, Yerushot. Now, doesn't Yerushot mean that he can testify about Yerusha? I mean, so Tosfos explains, the Gemara's Havamina over here is that the cases are all idiot. And that what it means is, Masaot, Matanot, Yerushot, Be'idiot. In other words, the way that we're talking about the halacha of this Cheresh, or this Ilein, is in terms of all these dinim, to be able to give edus for all these dinim. In the end, obviously, we're going to be machalik and say that ediot is the only thing that's referring to the case of edus yisha, and the other ones are not. But right now, the Gemara assumes that when we say yerushot, it means ediot about yerushot. Omra be'abo, that doesn't mean about other people's yerushot. It means that if a person, that this is the pashtus, and this is the way Tosfos understands the Gemara. It means that if a person is makir beno, that's a special pasuk, right? That's habuchor ben hasnua yakir latet lo pishnai. So that means that a father is believed to identify his bechor in order to establish his din that he gets pishnai. And that's what we're saying over here. What if the father cannot speak? So he could still be merames, or he could still write that this is beni bechori. Fine, that's okay. But that has nothing to do with giving testimony, so Abaye is perfectly okay. No, but it says l'masa'ot l'matanot. I mean, it says that we will trust his, I'm assuming it means his edus, when it comes to business, and when it comes to giving gifts, and whatever. I mean, I'm assuming that that means for another person. I can walk in and testify, even though he's unable to speak. No. It's not talking about edus at all. You're getting very mixed up. Masa'ot and matanot has to do with a person who cannot speak giving a gift, or a person who cannot speak engaging in a business. So over there we say that if he's able to write, and even if he's able to do it, I'll be remisa, that's good enough. What does that have to do with edus? You mixed up the cases in this brisa. The cases of masa'ot, matanot, yerushot are not talking about edus. By the way, I forgot to tell you, I told you Tosfos is pshat. Rashi understands that the meaning of our answer before, that we're talking about b'no b'chor, is not the identification of b'no b'chor, but rather to be able to change the Seder of the Yerusha by giving a gift as a living person who's a shchiv meira, or he wants to be mechalik mechosav al piv, as a real gift, a living gift. Fine. That is what it's talking about. But it has nothing to do with edus. Okay, that's Tosfos says. I mean, it's not the pashtus of what, that's not what we usually call a ben bechor. What we usually refer to that is mechalik nechosav al piv. That's how we would say it. Why would we talk about ben bechor specifically? So ben bechor implies that it's talking about the din of yakir and that he can identify his beno bechor. Okay.
And what about now testifying back, to the last time the person drank?
What?
What about testifying to the last time a person drank?
Somebody's making trouble back there in the background. Does anybody hear any strange sounds? Maybe Ashmadai, Shadim, whoa. So now getting to Rav himself. Rav claims that a Cheresh can actually be a normal person if he knows how to write. That's an amazing assertion. I mean, we never talked about that before. We talked about Cheresh not being able to speak, not being able to hear. Now, according to Rav, he doesn't need to be able to speak and hear. He needs to be able to communicate in writing, and that's fine. Meitve, what are you going to do about this brisa? Cheresh. If somebody is a real Cheresh, lo chubo achar mizotav, v'achar kvitzotav, v'achar ktav yado, we don't ever follow just the way that he's signing or the way that he's moving his lips or the way that he's writing doesn't mean anything to us. If he's a cheresh, it's not good enough. Except in one thing, if he wants to sell metaltalin, okay, sir, I want to make a takana that he is able to be considered mentally competent when it comes to sales. But not when it comes to selling even property, and certainly not for gittin. Now, Rav is saying that even for gittin, he would be considered to be a completely normal person because he's able to write. So apparently the Braise says, beferish not like Rav. You're right. The Braise says, beferish not like Rav. However, it's a machlokas tanoim. So I'm going to show you that there are those who actually agree with Rav that someone who can communicate in writing is not considered to be a cheresh. The Tanya. Omer Rav Yishmael ben Gamliel. Continuing in this Braise, when do we say that we will not look at the cheresh when he writes and consider that to be in any way meaningful? That's somebody who is congenitally cheresh. So he's a congenital deaf mute and he can communicate in writing. Okay, fine. That doesn't change the fact that he doesn't have what the Torah considers to be da'at in terms of connecting to the world. But if a person had developed a normal competence mentally, and then he loses his ability to communicate orally and audibly, so he can't hear, he can't speak, and he continues to show clear evidence of perfect rationality and maintaining the level of mental competence he had before by communicating in writing, that's what we're talking about. That's not a cheresh. That is somebody who continues his status of mental competence. He's showing you, he's writing, he's still communicating. You don't lose it if you had it. So in a case like that, if you're talking about a pikeach that was nitcharesh, then absolutely, he can write a get, and others can sign that get, and that's it. He's considered to be a normal person. So therefore, aliyah b'Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, that's true. Now what Rav is saying, that if a cheresh can actually write, so then he can divorce. Wait, you're saying that according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, if he started as a cheresh, then he cannot give a get? But I thought it says beferish in the Mishnah in Yevamos, k'shem shekontza b'remizah, kach motziya b'remizah, that the same way that a cheresh can marry a woman, he can divorce a woman, because it all goes according to his signing. But obviously, that's all the Rabbanan. Says the Gemara, well, obviously, if he married as a cheresh, he can divorce as a cheresh, because the same way that he married min Rabbanan, he divorces min Rabbanan. But what we're talking about over here is where he is actually a cheresh that is married min Yoraisa. How is that possible? If you're talking about a cheresh mikoro, how is he married min Yoraisa? Because it's talking about he has a yavama. And the Yavama is given to him by the Torah. And that, how's he going to get out of that by giving her a get after being koneser? If he takes her, he's not going to be able to divorce her. That's what we're talking about. Yevimto. I just want to make sure I understand you. Yevimto from whom? I mean, if it's a Yavama from a brother who is also a cheresh, I mean, so then it's all the Rabbanan. He should be able to take her and divorce her. Because k'shem shekniza tabarimiza, look, her original marriage to that brother who died and left her as Yavama was only Drabanan, because after all, the brother was a cheresh like him. Kachitzia tabarimiza. No, 100%. We're talking about over here that a cheresh has a completely normal brother. The brother got married. The brother died without children, leaving the cheresh his Yavama. That's a deraisa. And now, if that cheresh sleeps with the Yavama, now it's a deraisa that she's his wife. So how is he going to be able to divorce her? He's never going to be able to divorce her. That's what Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel was talking about. If he's married, how would he be married if he's a cheresh? By having a brother who died that left him Yavama, then he would be married deraisa. So then he wouldn't be able to write to give her a get. The only time you can write is when he started off as a full-scale, normal person. That's what he was coming to say. Well, you know what? I could even say that when it comes to Yavama, I would not allow him to give a get, even where his brother was also a cheresh. Why not? A gezeira. if people see a cheresh giving a get to a yavama that he took, they're not going to realize that it's only because his brother was married midrabbanan that he gave that get. They're going to think that apparently a cheresh can give a get to yavama, and they would therefore think that even if the brother was a full scale normal person, he would be able to. They make that mistake. In order to avoid that mistake, we do not allow a cheresh to give a get at all. Maybe that's what Shimon Gamaliel was referring to in that case when he said you cannot. Possibly. So even that, we wouldn't have allowed him to give a get, and that's what's what Shimon Gamaliel was referring to, and that would be because of gzera. Gzera achiv cheresh atu achiv pikeach. Wait, if that's true, so then the whole story breaks down. Because then why didn't we make a gezeira about his own wife? Didn't you just say that if a cheresh gets married min rabbanan, that he's able to give the get min rabbanan? Now you're saying that, well, people may get confused and they're going to think that the person is able to give a get. I mean, and they won't realize that it's only because it's a drabbanan, right? So therefore, we've got a real problem here. There should be a gezeira about his own divorce as well. So yachi ishtonani. No, come on. People get confused with a yavama from a brother who is an cheresh to a yavama from a brother who is not a cheresh. But they're not going to confuse his wife with a yavama, for heaven's sakes. Then nobody's going to get confused with that. Yavimto biyavimto michlafa. Ishto biyavimto lo michlafa. That's not a problem. Okay, but you know what? I got news for you. We do not make a gzera of a cheresh even when it comes to yavama. I'll prove it to you that we do not actually make a gzera of a cheresh atu pikeach. What's not? Take a look at this Mishnah. We've had this Mishnah. We know it very well in yavamas. The case is where you have two brothers, both of whom are charashim. They're married to two sisters. I don't care what those two sisters are. Those two sisters could be completely normal. They could be, both of them could be shteachiot charashot. One of them could be normal. One of them is abnormal. I couldn't care less. The same thing is true if the two achayot themselves are deaf and they're married to, I don't care what they're married to. They could be married to normal brothers. They could be married one normal, one abnormal. They could be married to two fully normal brothers. It makes no difference. In both of these sets, what are we talking about? We're talking about a marriage that is a derabanan. That's what we're talking about, right? Okay. So what we have over here is a case of an erva falling in a yibum, which is a derabanan. What's the difference? The din is over there. They're paturos min hachalitza min hayibum, obviously. Because, I mean, if two sisters, one of them is going to fall to yibum, to the person who's married to the other one, that's the normal din. That yibum doesn't take place if the yavama is a erva. Fine. Now, how about if they're not related to each other and there's no din of tzoras erva? What's the din then? So then, even though what we have over here is a marriage derabanan, so we also have a yibum derabanan. So they're brothers, which go ahead now and should be yikansu. If after they marry, they want to give a divorce, they can divorce. I thought you just said that we're going to make a gezera that you cannot divorce a yavama that falls to you from a rabbanan marriage. You cannot divorce because people will mistake that for a yavama that falls from a normal marriage. So obviously that's not true. Okay, so just cross that out. Machvartan kineshanin mikor, you're right. I shouldn't have said that. So Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, you're right. It's talking about a case of a yavama, and we're not going to be gezer the yibum of a cheresh. He's talking about the case of a yavama that falls from a fully cognizant brother. So over there's no way. That's what he's saying. Even if you write, it's not going to help you. Why? Because you have to be at least competent at birth. Okay. Anyway, getting back to Reb Shimon Gamaliel. Omer Reb Yochanan, look, I want you to understand that this braita, and this I'm sure was bothering you guys as well. I mean, why didn't we just say originally, when we asked on Rav from the Braita, and we said, here it says that if you write, it's no good. We could have answered, yes, of course. Rav means if you write, having originally been mentally competent, that you don't lose your mental competence. But he never meant to say that if you start off by being a cheresh and then learn how to write, that that takes away the din of a cheresh. We could have said that right off the bat. And here we now understand why we didn't say that right off the bat. Because it turns out that actually Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was not explaining that that's another alternative that the Rabbanon would agree to. He was arguing. The Rabbanon would say, never. I don't care if you start off, you don't start off. Writing is never mental competence. And it's only Reb Shimon ben Gamliel who says, I disagree. So I just want to make that clear, says Reb Yochanan. Chalukin alav chavirav al Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. Omer Abaye, afana nami tanina. Well, I mean, that's pretty clear from the Mishnah in Yevamos. It says in Yevamos that if a woman went insane, she was nishtatet. So her husband is not allowed to divorce her. Why? Because if she went insane, then people are going to take advantage of her. As we know, it happens all the time in mental institutions and so on. People take advantage of mental incompetence. So therefore, the Rabbanan answered her husband from throwing her out of the house, and now it's going to happen. So anybody could pick her up. That's ridiculous. If nitcharesh, who onishtata, but if the husband became a cheresh or he went insane, then he can never divorce at all. What do you mean? What's the difference between never divorce or don't divorce? My olamit. Ah, so that's a different way of putting it, right? So olamit must be coming to say, that's why we threw in that word. That even if he's able to communicate perfectly well in writing, so that proves that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel was definitely argued by the Chachamim, because over here we're talking about a man who got married and then he lost his mind as a cheresh, but he's still able to write. So here you see that the Rabbanan disagree. So that's perfectly clear that that must mean what Olamit is. But if that's the case, why do I need Reb Yochanan to tell me that? Tainas Abaya. I could have read that in the Mishnah. Why did the Mishnah in Yevamos use the word Olamit? Omer of Papa. Nonsense. If Rabbi Yochanan had not taught you this halacha, that Reb Shimon ben Gamliel is arguing on the Rabbanan, you would not have been able to derive it from the Mishnah in Yevamos, as I'll explain. I would have thought that actually Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, Reb Shimon Gamliel was only coming along to explain the Tanakhama. He wasn't coming along to argue on the Tanakhama. So what about the Mishnah? No, the Mishnah is coming to tell me something wonderful, very different than what you think. The meaning of olamit in the Mishnah means that afal gav dechazina le'decharif, even though we see that this person is perfectly rational in every way, he's still considered to be a cheresh. But it's not talking about if he writes, that's something else. If he writes, that's communication. So there's different issues over here. There's the question of da'at. Da'at does not mean intelligence. And therefore, even though this person is brilliant, he's harif, he's brilliant, he's still a cheresh and he doesn't have da'as. Now, if he's able to communicate, he may be stupid, but he still does have da'as. But what about if he is unable to communicate, but he can write? Oh, so that's what we're talking about. Maybe this mission is not referring to a case where he can write. Or, I have an even better explanation. The reason it says olamit, which is a clear distinction from the resha, where over there the woman went insane, and the Mishnah says, well, you're not allowed to divorce her. And the seifa that says you can never divorce her is exactly to tell me Reb Yitzchak's halacha. Namely, the Omer of Yitzchak, Dvar Torah shota mitgareshet. In the case of the resha, when we're talking about the woman being a shota, she can still get a get because a get can be given Baal Korcha and therefore it doesn't require her das. So it's the Rabbanan who said, don't give her a get because people will take advantage of her. But theoretically, if you gave her that get, it would be a good get. Possibly, by the way, not everybody agrees to that. Speak about Chokas Achronim in terms of the poskim. Did the Rabbanan even be gozer that even if you gave her the get, it's not a good get, you have to keep her? Or did they just say you're not allowed to give her the get? Okay, that's a side point. But the issue is that certainly, theoretically, she is able to be Megureshet. Certainly, Midiraisa. Masha Ein came, because that's the same thing as a Pikachat Baal Korcha. That's forcing a regular woman to accept the get. And the only reason that they said, Einim Megureshet, Shilayin Hagum Minag Hefker, we don't want people to be taking advantage of her. That's coming to contrast now, Lotha, to tell me, here we're talking about the theoretical possibility, and that you have to be very careful about, because there's no way that this person would be able to be begash. Okay, so then if that's the case, Enochinani, the Mishnah is not coming to address this issue of writing. Now, we are about to have a very special moment with our extremely esteemed Capitan, who, since his failure with the Titanic, has been banished to an island in the Baltic. But, he does need to polish up the lens on his camera so that we can see him more clearly, because it's very, very painful to watch our Capitan and not get the full impact of the big screen and Technicolor and maybe even the IMAX. And no, you got to do a better job than that, Rich, next time, but we'll take it for now. Give it to us, baby.
Ezuk the Halakha Mishnah. By the way, it's all a little right. Foggy here, so maybe it's the weather rather than the lens.
Well, that would explain the foghorn that we just heard in your voice. Okay. So now the question that we get to over here is the difference in what it was that the person enabled them to do. We've been talking about communicating with somebody who's going to tell you to give a get. But as we saw earlier in the Masechet a number of times, it really makes big difference about what it was that he empowered them to do. So let's finally get to the Mishnah that we've discussed so many times before. Omru lo nichtov get lishtecha. So again, it's the same question. Shall we write a get for your wife? Here we're talking about somebody who is able to communicate. The guy answers them and says, write that get. Tov. And so they go right ahead and they tell a sofer, okay, Joe just told us he wants to give a get to his wife. Please write the get for us. Then they go over to two witnesses and they say, Joe told us he wants to divorce his wife, so could you sign on this get? And then everything is done properly. Lishma, afa pishikatavu. And chatamuhu, and then it's handed over to Joe, and Joe gives it to his wife and says, here's your get. Forget about it. It's garbage. I raise a get batel. It's ridiculous. It's completely meaningless. Unless he said himself to that sofer, ketov, and said himself to the zedim, chatomu, they did not have the right just because he told them. He told them, write. And they tell somebody else to write. How can you tell someone else to write? And how can you tell someone else to sign? Nonsense. Now, the mashma'ut is here. Now, just let me remind you, gentlemen, that there are many issues that are wrapped in this seemingly innocent Mishnah. Because what we need to take into consideration is, recall, A, are mili mimsran l'shliach? Can you have a shliach give over a message? Or does a shliach only give over a particular thing? Okay, that was Machlokas of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yos. B, if a person says ketov, it's possible that he did not want anybody but you to do the writing. Why? Because he's embarrassed, as we saw before. A person doesn't want everyone to know that he doesn't know how to write again himself. So, I mean, he's supposed to be a Talmud Chacham. Why can't he write a get? So because of that, he wanted these people and only these people to write. That was another possibility, that even if you hold Mili Mimser in the Shliach, but you could still be makbid that nobody else would know it. Another issue that is very much part of the question, did this man mean to communicate the idea of giving the get to three people or two people? Because if he said it to three people, then if he had said ketov, then even three people, he meant, I'm embarrassed, I want you guys to write it. But if he would have said tnu, then they would have been empowered as a bezdin to be able to give it over if you hold mili ar mimsaran. So that means we have to talk about how many people are involved. A, did he say tnu or did he say ketov? B, do we hold mili mimsaran l'shliach or not mimsaran l'shliach? So that all of these factors are very much interrelated. And of course, you will recall the additional factor that we raised earlier that we'll ultimately raise here. What about, even if you hold like Rabbi Yossi, that Mili are not Mimser on the Shliach, what if you would have said to the Shliach, you tell the Sofer in my name to write? Does that not constitute a normal Shlucho Shel Adam Kamoto, even according to Rabbi Yossi? Remember that that was called Amar Imru. The guy said, you can tell someone else. So those are all the issues that we're going to need to talk about over here. So our first assumption is to take this very much at face value and to say, look, I mean, the Mishnah's got to be going according to Rabbi Meir, right? Because, I mean, what we said, if a guy says, give a get to my wife, he said tnu, he didn't say kitvu. So then according to Rabbi Meir, if it's to two people, so he may not want anybody to know, seem to care who wrote it. So that, oh, no. You can never give it to somebody else to do it because Mili lo mimser on Mishliach. So if we assume now that since the Mishnah didn't make any distinction between how many people, so apparently the number of people is not the issue, in which case this would be true, even if you said it to three people, right? Okay, so then what it's saying is that the only reason that over here it's useless is because the guy said kitfu, right? Time it alarm, it's new. It's only because he didn't say give the get, but if he said give the get, it would have been okay. And it's only the problem of saying kitfu that makes us assume that, well, even if there's three people here, he didn't want them to appoint a sofer. He wanted to keep it private that he doesn't know how to write a get. Okay, well, that is all a libra Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, theoretically, you can tell someone else to do something. They could have gone to a sofer. The only reason that you can't in this case is because the man said, I want you to write it. And we understand that to be something that is very meaningful to him. He doesn't want other people to know. But if he had just said tnu, it would have been good. According to Rabbi Yossi, if he had said tnu, it wouldn't have been good. So therefore, this must be money, Rabbi Meir, because Amar Tnu Notnim, and it would be going Alibet to Rabbi Meir, and only Alibet to Rabbi Meir, who holds Mili Mimzran Lishliach. Uh-oh. But then the Mishnah contradicts itself. Because look at the end of the Mishnah. The only thing that could be kosher, Achi Omar La Sofer Ketov, he's got to tell the Sofer directly. You write. He's got to tell the Edim directly. You sign. Then and only then would that be okay. That sugar-containing beverage should please not be put in the screen. Thank you. I don't care if it's got all of those poisonous semi-sugars. Please. Same thing, even worse. Nothing?
Nothing, with just a little bit of flavor. Like no sweetener.
No sweeteners, huh? All right. So, if the Mishnah says there's only one option, the only option is to say it directly yourself to the Sofer and the Edim, what does that mean? It's going like Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi is the one who holds that Mili lo mimser in the Shliach. I mean, come on. This Mishnah is completely contradictory. It starts off the Reish is Rabbi Meir, and then it says, Beferish at the end, essentially, that the Sefer is Rabbi Yossi. Is that what you believe? I don't have much of an alternative. Do I, says the Gemara? Yeah. Apparently, Reish Rabbi Meir was Sefer Rabbi Yossi. I don't know how else to read the Mishnah. Says the Baya, I can tell you how to read the Mishnah. I can make the Mishnah work out entirely like Rabbi Meir. Okay? Here's how I would say it. If we're talking about the last case of the Mishnah, we're talking about where the guy did not say to nu. In other words, we're continuing the original case. The guy said kitfu. He didn't say to nu. Okay, so then Enochinami, in any case where a man would have said kitfu, then the only thing that would allow a sofer to write is if he said that to the sofer, but not if he said it to anybody else. That's what the Mishnah is saying. So what's wrong with that? That works out perfectly well, according to Rabbi Meir. No, it doesn't. It's crazy. Then why would the Mishnah say, only if you hear directly? That's not the point. It's not only if you hear directly. It's only a problem where the guy said kitfu. So you should have said that if he would have said tnu, so then it would have been fine. I mean, this is the part that you need to discuss. Well, it's a given that he said kitfu. So then in that event, there's nothing you can do. Okay, so I'm not Seikitvu. That's the easiest thing for the mission to say. So the mission should say, not, you can't do this unless you hear it directly from him. It should say, you can't do this unless he told the original people to know instead of Kitvu. So that doesn't make sense. Okay, well, we could say maybe, says Abaya, that we're not talking about three people. We're talking about two people. So we're talking about two people. So even Rabbi Meir agrees that if we've got two people, then he doesn't mean to make them like a bezdin, that they should be able to make their own decisions. And therefore, if there would have been three people in Achinani, it would be okay, because it's going like Rabbi Meir. I got the same problem with this answer. Because then the way that the Mishnah should have ended was simply by saying, the only way such a thing would work is if he said it to three people. Well, why are you taking the case? The only way it would work is given it's two people, given that, and he has to say it directly. That doesn't make sense. Those givens don't make sense. It's much more direct to talk about the differences between Tenu and Kitfu, or the differences between two people and three people. So you see how these elements are all interrelated. That's why we need to keep in mind that the Mishnah is actually conflating a lot of different issues here. Okay, so I got another approach. Maybe the whole thing is Dafka not going like Rabbi Meir. Maybe we made a mistake in thinking the Reisha is going like Rabbi Meir. Maybe the Reisha is also going like Rabbi Yossi. And the case that we're talking about over here is a case in which he didn't say Imru. But if he had said Imru, and that's the point. So if he would have said Beferish that you could say Imru, then that would have been okay. And that's what the Gemara really should have been medayik from the Reisha of the Mishnah. Meaning, oh, so it's because of the fact that they said Kitvu, but they didn't say Imru Vekit, right? Imru Lechto. If they would have said Imru, that would have been okay. And then it means it's going a little bit of Rabbi Yossi. Because the only problem is that if you don't say Imru, then Mili Lo Mimsra Meshliach, and that's why it's not kosher. No. So then again, you have the same issue. Then the end of the Mishnah, why would the end of the Mishnah have said that you must hear it directly from him? No, the end of the Mishnah said the only way this would be okay is if the man said to them, Imru. That's the real Kiddush, right? So that's what it should have said. If he said Imru, then it would have been kosher. If the Sofer wrote and the Edim signed, then it would have been fine. Furthermore, I don't even think you're right. You're claiming that Rabbi Yossi is Moda, that if he would have said Imru, that then Mili would be Mimser on the Shliach, because he said, pass on my orders to the Sofer, please, in my name. That's not true. Mimoda Rabbi Yossi b'omer Imru. Now, this is a complete review of the sugya we had before. Remember before we had the same question when we asked, is Rabbi Yossi Moda b'Imru b'omru Imru? And remember that it involved the question of whether we would need to make a gezeira that Sofrim can never sign as witnesses on a get. Why? Because of the awkwardness of a situation that is liable to come up. What is that awkwardness? The Sofer writes the get, and now he says to the people who told him, okay, so I'll sign as one of the Aiden. It's very awkward for them to admit that the husband said that he's not supposed to be the one that signs. Right? So therefore, they may end up postulating the get because they're too embarrassed to tell the guy the truth. So then there ought to be a gezeira. We don't allow Sofer to sign gets. Okay, so then that avoids any type of awkward situation. Since there is no such gezeira, then it must be that we're going aliba de Rabbi Yossi. Why? Because aliba de Rabbi Yossi, no self-respecting sofer will ever sign a get anyway until he is actually appointed to do so. Because mili lo mimsra l'shliach, and he had to hear the imru imru. So, and we even said lo yaseh kein b'Yisrael. So it's not going to happen. So we don't need to worry about that, right? That's in the end how we work it out. Okay, so let's go through the raya once again. I'm not going to go into the details. It was a little bit circular and circuitous, I mean, and therefore it would take us too long to go through the each step again, but I'm sure we just did it a couple of days ago. You'll remember. So if you're going to tell me that va'od mimayda Rabbi Yosi ba'omer imru. What are we going to do with the Mishnah later on? The Mishnah says, if a sofer wrote a get and there's one aid on the get, then it's a kosher get. And Rabbi Yirmiyah explained that to mean not that the sofer wrote the get, the sofer signed the get. Chatam sofer shanino. Now, Rav Chisda was medayik with that Mishnah that it could only be going aliba to Rabbi Yosi, because Rabbi Yosi holds mili lo mimsran l'shliach. Therefore, there will never be an awkward situation because the sofer will never say, okay, I'll sign. He'll say, what, are you crazy? I can't sign this get. Nobody told me to sign this get. And therefore, nothing bad is going to happen because the Edom are never going to be embarrassed. They're never going to be in an awkward situation. Now, my problem is that if, according to you, Rabbi Yosi would actually agree that you can tell a sofer to write a get, so then you'll have the same issue, because it could be that the husband would say to two people, tell the sofer, but he can only write. And you tell these other two guys and they sign. So they tell the sofer, Joe's set to write a get. Okay, so sofer writes the get. He assumes that when he heard Joe's set to write a get, it means that Joe's set to sign the get. And mili mimser and the shliach, in the event that he said imru, and he'll think imru. So he'll say, okay, I did my job, now I'll sign. Sure, go ahead, sign. Well, that's the same awkward situation. Must be, therefore, that Rabbi Yosi holds that there will never be an awkward situation. Why? Because the only time a sofer can write a get is if the husband himself told the sofer. So how is it ever going to come to a matzav like this? Ridiculous. No one will ever tell the sofer anything. Okay. So then it means, this could be a catastrophe. He'll tell two people, tell the sofer v'yichtov, and tell these two other guys to sign. And because of the awkwardness of Kisufa the Sefer, who assumed that when he was told to write a get, it included signing the get, and they'll say, yeah, go ahead. They'll let him sign. The husband never said that he could sign. So it must be that, in fact, Aliba de Rabbi Yosi will never end up with this problem. Why? Because you can't say Imru. Ha! Even if you would have said Imru, Rabbi Yosi would have disagreed. Okay? So can we understand that we do not have a way to explain the Mishnah is going Aliba de Rabbi Yosi? Sorry. So then we have to go back to what we said before. Ela Machvarta. We have no choice. The Reish is Rabbi Meir, who holds Mili Mimser and a Shliach. The Sefer is Rabbi Yosi. There's no possible way of telling a sofer to write unless he hears it straight from, well, the wife would say the horse's mouth. And of course, the husband doesn't agree to that. But unless you hear it straight from the husband's mouth. Guys, we have a few more minutes. And because we're not going to be able to learn tomorrow during the day because of Tisha B'Av, and people may be a little bit not in the best mood to learn tomorrow night. I think we have to learn anyway, right? You agree with me. We can't lose the day. And the Tisha B'Av is the day we want to learn. Lo borchu b'torah t'chila. So, I mean, you know, this would be a perfect day to learn, especially. But we would want to be mamay at the amount of time that it would take us, because we probably can't start till, I guess, about 9:30 would be okay. So 9:30. So in that event, maybe we should learn just a little bit. Yeah, me. Richie.
Not for me.
Good old Richie.
The question is, I mean, can I passively listen? Just sort of know?
I wish there were a way.
Okay.
Wait a minute. I mean, you're relying on a Chabad calendar, so you can rely on a Chabad rabbi. Ask the Chabad rabbi if you can learn on Tisha B'Av.
In the end, I didn't. In the end, I stayed with my Zmanim, which gave me an extra 40 minutes. Actually, there's a 7-minute difference between the Chabad calendar and my Zmanim and when the fast ends.
Okay.
But 7 minutes doesn't make 2 hours. So, right. By me, it ends at 11:17 by my Zmanim and 11:10 by the
all Chabad, right, but in any event, you're certainly late. In favor of our continuing a little bit more now, right? So you lose out on less.
But,
okay,
yeah.
Great. But let's learn a little bit more. Rav Ashi says you do not have to give up on the pshat that it could be Rav Yossi. You don't have to accept that the Mishnah is half Rabbi Meir and half Rav Yossi. We could say that actually the whole Mishnah is going on Liban Rav Yossi. And Mili Lo Mimsar Mishliach. And the Seder of the Mishnah is a Seder of Lo Mi Boy. In other words, first we tell you the obvious thing. In other words, Lo Mi Boy Echad Lo Amartnu. Obviously, in a case where the guy said only Kitfu, he didn't just say Tnu. But, continues the mission now in the Sefer, even if he would have said Tnu, that would not help, because Mili Lo Mimsar Mishliach. Furthermore, not only in a case where he didn't say it to three people, even if he said it to three people, he would not be able to have them give it to somebody else. And that's because not he said Kitfu, but because Mili Lo Mimsaran. And the final cases, not only in the event that he said it to three people and that he said Tnu, and you would think, okay, that's only because he didn't say Imru, right? And Mili Lo Mimsar L'Shliach. No. Even if he did say Afilu Amar Imru, Nami Lo. So therefore, the Mishnah is written in this way. Your question, so why don't we say, but if he said Tnu? No. If he said Tnu, it wouldn't be good. Well, why don't we say if he gave it to three? No. If he gave it to three, it wouldn't be good. Why doesn't it say if he said Imru? No. It wouldn't be good even if it was Imu Imru. That's the way the Mishnah is constructed. In which case, the whole thing is beautifully bringing out the Shita of Rabbi Yossi. And I'll prove it to you that even if you said Beferish Imru Imru, they still have to sign it and write it all on their own. Tanya Gavasi de Ravashi, Katav Sofer Lishma. Let's say the Sofer wrote the get entirely for this woman. The Edim signed the get entirely lishma. They hand it over to the husband to give it to that woman. The husband goes out and gives it to her and he says, here is your get. Garbage. Hare I get but tell. Until you hear it from the horse's mouth. Ach yishmu kolot. You have to hear the voice of the husband saying, to the sofer, ketov, to the Edim, chatomu. That and only that would be kosher. Now, let me show you what each one of these words mean so you can understand how much this is a riot. Achi yishmu'u. Hear it yourself, okay? Now, that means Moti Rabbi Yossi Bomer Imru. You need to hear it yourself, not somebody tell you. The guy told me to tell you. No, doesn't help. So forget that. Kolo, it's got to be in his voice. What's that coming to tell you? Don't believe this business about Rav. He can write it. I need to hear your voice. And therefore, even writing it wouldn't be good. And that is the beautiful point of this braita, to clarify what the halacha is of both of the issues that we spoke about. Okay, gentlemen, that's wonderful. Allows us to start tomorrow night, Bezrat Hashem, 9:30. Unless, for some reason, even in the nighttime, we have to be icy. I mean, you're not allowed to build a base of English at night, but it could be that you never know what happens during the course of the day. Could be that there'll be some additional materials to transfer, stuff like that. We might all be busy. If that's the case, we'll have to put off the next stuff. In the unfortunate situation that we won't be busy with doing some important things, and all we'll have on our minds is eating, because it ended up being a tinus, which is ridiculous. So then we'll meet at 9:30, Bezrat Hashem. Okay, wishing you all a wonderful Erev Tisha B'Av with lots of good news starting early. See you then. Kol Tov.